you haven't taken the opportunity to introduce yourself to them, Andrew is going to be working with our young people. So we want to welcome them, and we're going to have a little bit of a get-together today at 4 o'clock at our house in their honor. So many of you have already said you're coming, and that's wonderful. We look forward to having that time together. So again, just take the opportunity this morning to introduce yourself to them. It's also good when things are right, sometimes things are right. When they're wrong, they're just wrong, right? You feel things, you see things, and sometimes things should be and they're not. And lately, things haven't been the way they should be. And there was someone missing right up at the front because she couldn't get in here so easily, so she had to sit out there. And it's just wonderful to see John and Cheryl sitting back because Cheryl has a boot on and is able to get around on some crutches. And she's healing, and we've been praying for that, and we are so excited. I love to see her smiling face right there. It gives me encouragement. I know it does John, too, because he's smiling now, too. It's right. Sometimes things are just right. And I'm so excited to see her sitting right there, as always, where she needs to be. This morning, if you haven't looked at the bulletin, the title of the lesson is just simply, "It Does Not Matter How Slowly You Go." Thinking about that, I was thinking and reading through some famous quotes. And the last month or so, I've been reading as many as I could, just trying to come up with some things that maybe you've heard before, some things that I've heard in my life and wanted to share with you. This saying came from, as far as I can tell, Confucius is the one who came about and said it. Anybody know that? Did you know that he's the one who said that? I didn't either, so we're all on the same page. Look at that. Here's a little clip about Confucius, a famous Chinese philosopher and writer whose work inspired the Chinese school of thought known as Confucianism, if I said that correctly. One of his most known quotes is, "Do not do to others what you do not want done to yourself." Does that sound familiar? Another one, famous quote, reveals his belief in finding one's passion or calling in life. It says, "Choose a job you love and you will never have to work a day in your life." I didn't know he said that. Born in 551 BC, Confucius is comparable to Socrates of the Western world, his teachings emphasizing morality as a path to understanding and enlightenment. A famous lesson, he told a student that reciprocity is one word that sums up his philosophy on life. According to Confucius, wisdom, compassion, and courage are the three universally recognized moral qualities of men. Confucius said, "It does not matter how slowly you go, as long as you don't stop." And I thought about that. And I thought about that phrase and think, you know, how many lessons we've heard in our life about that. Don't give up. Don't quit. But the first part of it is what I really wanted to focus on this morning. And I think about this little phrase, "It doesn't matter how slowly you go." Now, how many people do we have in here that are coaches or have ever coached in your life? There's a few. How many times did you tell your athletes, "You're running too fast. Just slow down. Take it easy." Ashley, did you ever hear that? I've heard her dad share some thoughts, and it was never that. I can remember back in my coaches, and they were like, "We can use an hourglass to time you, son." Now, we're talking about long distance. We're talking about sprints. We're always talking about hurry up, speed up, go a little bit faster, right? That's the world that we live in. Too many times in this world, we are emergency driven, aren't we? This has to happen yesterday. We've got to get this done right now. And so we focus on those things that seemingly are emergencies in our life, and we say we've got to hurry up, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up. I'm sad to tell you that I have used that phrase way times in my life, especially with my kids. You can ask Preston for sure. And he hears it all the time. Hurry up, son. We got to leave. Hurry up. Hurry up. Hurry up. Who knows who Aesop is? You heard that? Okay. We don't know if he was a real person or not. There is debate. But some say that he lived from 620 BC to 564 BC. And he met his doom by being thrown over a cliff to his death. I don't know. He's been given credit for a number of fables and stories that he's come up with. Whether he has or not, whether that was a real person or someone who wrote some things and was given credit for it, I don't know. But one of his famous stories was the tortoise and the hare. Anybody remember that one? It's been rewritten, retold, made into movies and cartoons and all of those things. And we know that the hare was always bragging about how fast he was and how much better he was and all of those things until the tortoise finally one day was fed up with it and said, I challenge you to a race. Now, who in their right mind that is a tortoise challenges a hare or a rabbit to a race? Nobody. But we watch the story unfold, and you know that they begin the race, and the hare takes off very quickly and is running for the finish line, and there's nothing in this world that can possibly stop him from finishing before the tortoise. This race is fixed. The hare is going to win. But what happens to the hare? He says, I've got this. So I'm going to sit down and enjoy a little nap. And the tortoise never stops. And he keeps his eyes on the goal, on that finish line, and slowly but surely he's walking and he's moving closer and closer. And just at the time the hare awakens and he looks and he sees the tortoise crossing the finish line and he knows that he's lost. And I think about this story, and no, I do not know the actual moral that was trying to be taught. Nobody really does. And if you've read about this, Google it sometime and see how many different people have written about this little story and what the moral of this story is. And there's ideas, all kinds of ideas about it. But we're not here this morning necessarily to talk about the tortoise and the hare, but about the biblical truths that I think that can come from this idea of it doesn't really matter that you're going slowly through this life. Sometimes I believe that's a benefit. Many times in our life we need to slow down and take the course that the tortoise did to finish. He never took his eyes off the finish line. He never got distracted about what he was up against. He knew that he was up against insurmountable odds and there was no way that he could possibly beat the hare. But he never quit. He never stopped. And so I began thinking about what kind of truths biblically do we get from this? And there's a couple that I want to share with you. First one is this. Think soberly. Don't get caught up in your own identity and things that you are and experiences. Don't get caught up in those daily choices of life. Paul writes to the Thessalonian church in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 6. So then let us not sleep as others do, but let us be alert and sober. Let us stop. Let us contemplate. Let us think about what we're doing. To Timothy in 2 Timothy 4, 5, but you be sober in all things and endure hardship. 1 Corinthians 15 and 34, become sober-minded as you ought to be. Again to the Thessalonians in chapter 5 and verse 8, but since we are of the day, let us be sober, having put on the breastplate of faith and love, and as a helmet the hope of salvation. Peter writes in 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 13, "Therefore, prepare your minds for action. Keep sober of spirit. Fix your hope completely on the grace to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ." And in chapter 4 and verse 7, he says, "The end of all things is near. Therefore, be of sound judgment and sober spirit for the purpose of prayer." And then 1 Peter 5, verse 8, he says, "Be of sober spirit. Be on the alert. Your adversary, the devil, walketh about as a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour." And I think about this truth about sobriety, that we need to be people who are thinking, who don't allow distractions, and we have a clear mind, is literally what they've been saying. Both Paul and Peter both. Our minds have to be clear, our minds. And we don't do that rushing. We don't do that in emergency things. We don't do that. We don't learn. We don't contemplate. We really don't think about it when everything is rush, 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 rush. Slow down. It doesn't matter how slow we go, as long as we're paying attention to where we need to be. Think soberly. What does it mean? First, I believe there's intent. Now think about this. How many have you ever, and you don't have to raise your hand, but how many of you have ever said this, "I'll pray for you"? Have you ever told anyone that you're going to pray for them? Something's going on in their life, something that they're struggling with. Maybe a family member, or maybe it's a health issue, or maybe it's a job, or maybe it's all different kinds of things that are going on in our life, and people are struggling, and if you know it, and especially when someone asks you, "Will you pray for me?" and you say, "I will pray for you." Let me ask you this. Did you actually pray for them? How many times do we hear, "I'll pray for you," and never does it happen? Why? Because we're going so fast, we forget to do it. We get up in the morning and we're rushed and we don't take time to pray. We get through all the meetings and everything else that's going on in life and we don't stop to pray. We don't keep our eyes focused on where we're going, and we don't have this intent in our life, in our heart, as to who we need to be and what we are all about. So why do we say it? Why do we say, "I'll pray for you," when we have no intent of ever doing it? I look on Facebook, and I know sometimes it's horrible, it's awful, but there's a lot of good things as well that happen on it. And you learn information about things. And how many times do you hear this phrase or read this phrase, "praying for you," prayers, all of that. And I'm looking at the people who are saying, "I'm praying for you," and I think, I don't know if they've ever said a prayer in their life. Maybe they have. But every other post that they make is about where they're going out, where they're partying, what they're drinking, what they're doing, and all these other things. And I'm thinking, is that who you really want praying for you? Is that even, do you even believe they're going to pray? I don't know. But with us, we start contemplating, who are we? And when I'm thinking soberly, when I'm going slowly through this life, and I'm taking everything in, and I'm watching, and I never take my eyes off the finish line, how important is prayer? What is the intent of my life? How am I going to... What is the finish line in my life? Not only intent, but purpose. Sobriety. How many of you have used the words, "I love you"? And how many times does the words, "I love you," actually define that relationship? It's easy to say, "I love you," isn't it? Has anyone never heard or used those words? Anybody? But when we stop and we back up, the reality sinks in. When I use it, did I choose to actually do what I said I'm doing? I love you. Did I choose to do that? Or am I so busy? Am I running so fast? Am I filled with so many things that that isn't actually a part of my life? What did I actually do to this person that I just said, I love you? What did I do to make their life better? What did I do to encourage them in their relationship with God? What did I do to do that? So I back up and say, did I really love them? Thinking soberly forces us to stop and truly evaluate every choice that we make. And so I think about that tortoise as he's walking along towards the finish line. I don't know what all he's thinking about. But if I'm that tortoise, what am I thinking about? What about my relationships? What about my life? Where am I going in this life? What am I trying to accomplish in this life? Why am I even living this life? Why am I doing what I'm doing? Why am I here? Why do I even have a conversation with you, with anyone else? Why am I doing it? You see, when we're going a little more slowly, it gives us more time to think, doesn't it? I don't know if you like to think. Sometimes I like to be all alone. Typically, I'm up here every Sunday morning pretty early because it is about the only time that's truly quiet in my life, and I stop and I think. And sometimes as I'm reading through notes or reading through the Bible, something comes that maybe I never thought of, or God is leading me in some way, or telling me something through His Word that I didn't get before. The rest of the week, some days things are non-stop. Things are going on. Isn't that the way life is? People are calling, people are texting, people are coming by, and that is amazing, and I love it. I enjoy visiting with people. But sometimes there's no quiet. And so I think, where is our quiet time? When do we slow down and start taking life the way God intended for us to, slowly, thinking, embracing all that He's given us? I think when we're going slowly, it doesn't only force us to think soberly, but it helps us make informed decisions. Those relationships that we have, I have so many times talked with young people over the last 30 years who are wanting to date. And they're like, one boy says, we don't even know what to say. And the girls the same way. They've got a new outfit and they are going to walk in 9-inch tall heels. I would break both ankles, knees, whatever, from falling. But they want to those boys, that or that boy, to notice them. And I ask, why are you wanting that boy or that girl to notice you? Well, they're cute. I like them. Why? What is your intent? And what kind of decision, when you make a decision that I like this boy, I like this girl, why are you making that decision? And then one day they say, I want to marry this person. And I say, why do you want to marry them? Why would you want to do that? Because I love them. What do you mean you love them? Why do you love them? Because every time I'm around them, I just feel good. Sorry. That's not love. That's Taco Bell Supreme Enchilada or something. I don't know. But that's not love. It's just not. Why do you love them? That feeling and those butterflies, that's all right. But that is not what love is. Why do you love this person? You need to stop and start thinking about what this relationship is all about. Don't run into it. Don't take off like the hare as fast as you can and say, this is it. This is the all. This is the greatest relationship in the world. And then you get into it and go, why in the world did I get here? Why am I in love with this person? And so we start thinking about relationships. And we know we've got to learn to make informed decisions. And when we do it quickly, we don't do a good job. How many of you, before you buy something, you read everything that you can about it? Man, I'm going to get out Consumer Reports, or I'm going to get online and Google this particular thing, and I'm going to see what everybody has to say about it. And sometimes we may even go overboard, and it's a year later, and we still haven't decided if we're going to get it or not. But the reality is, how much better, how much more informed of a decision can we make that will be a positive benefit in our life when we go slowly into making those decisions? It's the same with Christianity. Why did you decide to become a Christian? Because of your friends? Because some other person said, hey, this is really cool. This is a good thing. I'm going to do this. I don't know how many people I've had conversations with through the years that they made this decision, and a year or two or five or 10 or 20 years later, they go, I have no idea why I ever made that decision back then. I don't have a clue. I don't know why I did it. I can tell you that it didn't make any difference in my life. It didn't change me. I really didn't know. Why did you become a Christian? And until we learn to stop, until we learn to slow down and start evaluating our life and our decisions and asking ourselves, why am I doing what I'm doing? We can read, we can study, we can talk, but we have to come face to face. We have to look at ourselves in that mirror and really evaluate who I am. Why am I doing what I'm doing? Why am I in the relationships I'm in? What is it going to benefit me? How is me being in this relationship with this person going to benefit me? Does that sound selfish? It can. If all I'm looking for is physical things, that's not what I'm talking about. How is this person going to help me cross the finish line, and that finish line being God welcoming me home one day? How are they going to help me get there? And if it doesn't start there, then we're entering it for the wrong reason. And we need to back up and end that, or at least put that off and say, until I can understand why I'm in it, I don't need to be in it. Why am I in? Why am I choosing the things that I'm choosing? Mark chapter 4, beginning in verse 1. If you want to turn over there, you know this passage. It's a passage of the parable of the soils. And beginning in verse 1, he says, and he began to teach again by the sea, and such a very large crowd gathered to him that he got into a boat in the sea and sat down, and the whole crowd was by the sea on the land. And he was teaching them many things in parables and saying to them in his teaching, listen to this. Behold, the sower went out to sow, and as he was sowing, some seed fell beside the road, and the birds came and they ate it up. Other seed fell on the rocky ground where it did not have much soil. Immediately it sprang up because it had no depth of soil. And after the sun had risen, it was scorched, and because it had no root, it withered away. Other seed fell among thorns, and the thorns came up and choked it, and it yielded no crop. Other seed fell into the good soil, and as they grew up and increased, they yielded a crop and produced 30, 60, and 100-fold. And he said, he who has ears to hear, let him hear. And I think about this parable, and I think about how quickly a plant a seed is planted in rocky soil and soil that's not deep, and how quickly it pops up. And there may be some excitement. And we go, wow, look at that. There's the plant, and it comes up. But all of a sudden, as quickly as it came up, the sun got to it because it didn't have any roots, and it died. And how many times in our life is our faith like that? That's exactly what he's saying. There's time in your life that you're going to choose your heart and your mind of what kind of soil God's Word is going to be planted in. It's your choice. And if you are like that rocky soil, where you're always rushing about everything that's going on, and you're not slowing down, and you're not contemplating the things in your life, then that's the kind of soil we'll be. We'll be shallow. And every time anything comes against us, what happens? We wither and we die. But if we choose to be the soil that's cultivated, and we slow down, and we listen to God, and we allow His Word to change us, and we spend time in it, and time with Him, and talk to Him, and we're praying with Him, and we look at our life in this world, and we say, God, I need You to lead me. I need You to guide me. I need You to open doors for me. I need to understand, is this the relationship I should be in? Help me understand. Put somebody in my life that will help me do these things. It'll help me understand. And we begin cultivating the soil of our heart and our mind, readying it for God's kingdom to rule in our life. And what happens? Everything, the life that we have, is beautiful. 30, 60, 100 fold, he says, happens. When we back up, if we could look at our life and we see the soil, and we see all the benefits and the blessings, slowly we go through this life listening to God and allowing Him to guide us where we need to be. One last thought. We need to always be ready. The tortoise didn't quit. He didn't give up. He didn't lay down and take a nap. He very methodically went through life, slowly but surely, never taking his eye off of his goal. Matthew chapter 10 and verse 34. He says, Do not think that I came to bring peace on earth. I did not come to bring peace, but I came to bring a sword. What? Think about it. Judgment is coming on this world. And those who don't want to be a part of my kingdom, I'm telling you, I'm going to divide it. I'm going to divide my kingdom. My kingdom is not going to allow just anybody into this kingdom. You have to make a choice if you want to be in this kingdom. You have to be ready. You have to accept it. You have to love it. You have to want to be a part of it. You have to be ready. He goes on to say, I will cause man to be against father and daughter to be against mother. Man's enemies will be in their own household. I'm going to divide. Are you ready? Do you know what that means in your life? What is that going to do to you? Matthew 24, verse 42 through 44 was read just a little while ago. He says, therefore be on the alert, for you do not know which day your Lord is coming. In verse 44, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour that you do not think He will come. Spiritually speaking, our lives must always be searching and looking and longing for our Savior, waiting for Him to come. So this morning, as we close, I want to end with this. The next time you're making a decision, especially a decision seemingly to be an emergency, something that we have to rush into, take time to evaluate what you're doing and ask yourselves some very important questions. Three questions, and I'll end it and give it to you, the invitation this morning. Number one, what does this situation have to do with the will of God in my life? What does this situation that I'm about to enter into, this situation that I'm getting forced to make a decision about, what does this situation have to do with the will of God in my life? Ask that before you make it. Second, how will God bless me through the decision that I make? How will God bless me through the decision that I'm about to make? And third, how can I bless those around me through the choice of my decision? How can I bless others through the choice, through the decision that I'm making? When we learn to ask those three questions, we've learned to slow down, we've learned to listen, we've allowed God to come into our life. Help us focus on the goal. What goal? That finish line. The finish line when the Lord returns one day to welcome us home. Makes me and reminds me of Paul as he's talking to Timothy. And he says, I'm already being poured out like a drink offering. The time of my departure has come. I have fought the good fight. I have finished my course. I've kept the faith. In the future, there is a crown of righteousness laid up for me, which the righteous judge will award me on that day. But not only me, but everyone who has loved his appearing. Do you love the appearing of our Savior? If he were to return right now, this morning, would you be one who loved his appearing? Or would you wake up and realize you've been asleep? And that's not where we want to be. Take your time in this life. We don't have to rush towards anything because we're heading for eternity, a place with God that He's going to bless us with everything. We don't have to rush because the best is to come forever. What a wonderful place it'll be the day we get to be before God and hear Him say, well done, good and faithful servant. What kind of life are you living? Have you been rushing through this life? It's time to slow down. Slow down and let God have control of your life. So very simply this morning, His invitation, not mine, but His to you. Will you slow down? Will you allow Him to rule in your life? That's a choice you have. And if you're ready to start a life with Him today and be immersed into Him, we can do that. We would celebrate with you that decision. If maybe you're ready to just slow down, then I challenge you to do that. But if you need us to pray with you, even on a regular basis, we would love to do it. But if you want this church family to pray with you about something going on in your life, we would love to do that as well. So this morning, we're going to offer you the Lord's invitation. If there's anything that we can do for you in a public way, we ask you to come right now while we stand and we sing. The voice of Jesus calleth.